Do you think it's safe to ask them?
Hear me, all you hosts gathered here.
Kill everyone now. Condone first-degree murder. Advocate cannibalism. Eat shit.
Well, I think we're about ready. Quiet, everyone.
Filth are my politics. Filth is my life.
From the whispers of the damned, deep within the bowels of hell, welcome to Astro Radio Z.
Welcome back to another episode of your favorite podcast, Astro Radio Z, and today we're getting back into the swing of the VHS kick with two primo pieces of exploitation trash, one in Dean R. Kuntz's Watchers 2, which I'm sure he wouldn't be too pleased with me saying Dean R. Kuntz before that title, and the third movie in the Project Shadow Chaser series, Project Shadow Chaser 3000. So let's take a quick break and fire up that old VCR, shall we?
Astro Radio Z.
From a top secret government laboratory come two genetically altered life forms. One is a dog of astonishing intelligence. The other, a hybrid monster of a brutally violent nature. From Dean R. Kuntz's electrifying bestseller, Watchers, springs a new and terrifying creation.
Remember back in the 80s when everybody wanted to be the next Stephen King and they kept churning out these people that were supposed to be, oh, this is the next big thing. You better watch out. And Dean R. Kuntz was always kind of thrown into that conversation. And then every single time they would make a movie off of one of his books, you'd be like, oh, really? Hey, I'll speak for myself, because that's how I felt every single time I saw a movie that had Dean R. Kuntz attached to it. And that brings us to our movie today that we're watching, our first VHS tape, which is the sequel to a Corey Haim movie, Watchers. Watchers 2 here, starring Mark Singer and Tracy Scoggins, who's always a wonderful sight in every single movie. Is more along the lines of a reimagining of the first movie as opposed to an actual like through line sequel, with Corey Haim kind of being replaced by Mark Singer, who's this, you know, down on his luck military man about to be arrested and court-martialed. And then he gets roped into the whole, you know, monster on the loose trying to kill a dog gimmick that the first movie was. When I looked at these movies originally back in the 90s, I was pretty like on both of them, because I mean, they're fine. There's nothing really to get pissed at about either of them. I don't think either of them are bad movies, I think, by any extent. They're just not entirely original and not entirely exciting when it comes to the monster mash thrills that the box cover kind of alludes to, that it promises that you're going to be getting. So let's get to the box art, as we always do here. Let's look at this box. There's no tagline on the front. On the back, the tagline is, "Don't look back or you'll never see anything again." I never quite figured out, like, what was the reasoning, at least in Watchers 2, because it's been, holy shit, it's got to be well over 25 years since I've seen the original Watchers. But why was it called Watchers? Like, I never quite understood watching this movie, and I'm going to say watch a lot, I can already tell, why it's called Watchers. If you have any ideas, please make note. either on the YouTube page, send me an email at astroradiozpodcast @gmail.com, or on the Facebook, wherever, Instagram, wherever I post this thing. Why is this thing called Watchers? I didn't quite understand that, because the monster itself isn't necessarily like, it has a hard time like seeing in the light, and it only really can come out at night. So does it mean it's watching from the darkness? Is that what it means? If that's all that it means, then man, that's fucking weak. But anyways, here's the back of the box. Let me put on my glasses, because I've reached that age now. I'm an old man, and if I don't have my fucking spectacles to read, I can't see a goddamn fucking thing. That's age, folks. Based on the best-selling Dean R. Koontz novel, Watchers 2 continues the terrifying saga of two genetically altered life forms turned loose. One is a super intelligent golden retriever with an uncanny ability to communicate and reason. The other is a hybrid monster, a non-human assassin created to track the dog and destroy all who come in contact with it. The golden retriever finds and befriends a fugitive from the Marine Corps, played by Mark Singer. The clever dog prompts the Marine captain to call an animal psychologist from the top secret lab where the genetic manipulation occurred. Together with this trusted psychologist, played by Tracy Scoggins, they attempt to elude the murderous monster and the gory trail of death closing in on them. Running at 101 minutes, Watchers 2 is a fine watch. If you're really looking for something that's low-key, you don't got to put your brain on to, and it kind of provides some easy thrills, Watchers 2 is just perfect. You know, cable TV fodder. There's nothing offensive about it. There's nothing terribly like boring about it. It's just middle of the road, easy listening fare for horror fans. Nothing more, nothing less. If I gotta say a thumbs up or a thumbs down on this, I give it a meh. A very solid meh. Because I'm glad I watched it. I mean, it didn't like make me upset, but it also, if I didn't take notes to it, I really wouldn't remember anything that happened in it. It just kind of like took place. I can say with this podcast, if I look back, like that's why, you know, we all have Letterboxd, right? So if we can remember and go back and say, hey, I actually see this movie? I can go back and I have proof that I've watched Watchers, because I tell you this, I won't remember a goddamn thing. And that's why I don't remember anything about the first one. This is kind of more of the same. Now let's go to the good, the bads, and the what the fucks that we usually do here on Astro Radio Z for these movies. And the goods, there's right off the bat, this movie takes place in a lab, kind of not unlike the one that we saw in Shadow Zone. And there's a bunch of, you know, secret scientists and agents that are down in a basement taking care of the Watchers monster, because the goddamn thing can't be trusted and it'll just kill anything that moves. A couple asshole FBI agents show up at the lab and attempt to do something with the monster itself because they see untapped potential or some bullshit like that. And one of the agents stupidly gets too close to the fucking containment unit that the Watchers monster is put into and gets killed. And when the agent gets killed, she immediately turns into a shitty dummy, which, you know, I highly appreciate that kind of hijinks. Later, after it's been told to the scientist that actually created the monster that it's... they're going to terminate the entire program and they must eliminate and terminate all of the creatures that they've been genetically manipulating and educating and all of this shit. He decides, you know what? This is not going to fly. We got to break this thing out of here. There is just too much potential for this monster and it's the next evolutionary step and blah, 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 blah. You know, the same old bullshit that not a single other person than this fucking deranged asshole would think. He implants a tracker into the monster after he, you know, shoots him full of enough fucking tranquilizer that it would kill a small elephant. He implants a tracker that looks like a bunch of Legos put together. It's fucking hilarious. He shoves this like Lego tracker like into like this rubber flesh. And you're supposed to believe that any of this is real. And it just, there's no way. Its creator walks around with a beeping device, of course, later after this is implanted and the monster breaks free. And this beeping device is literally just a box with a red light. And Mark Singer, who, of course, upon finding this, you know, tracking, finding out it has a tracker and that this device is a tracker, he goes, oh, it's a tracking device. We use them in the military. Because, of course, you know, once you see one, you've seen them all. Outside of these really stupid hijinks, one of the best things you see, and it's unfortunate that she's only in this thing for an eye blink in one scene, Mary Warnoff suddenly shows up. And man, do I wish she played a bigger part. I actually wish that the role of the creator of the monster had been flip-flopped with Mary Warnoff. Mary Warnoff is always so wonderful in everything she's in. And unfortunately, she basically shows up and then pieces the fuck out. So, I mean, hey, for the like 3 minutes she's in this movie, she is so welcome. I love Mary Warnoff. So this genetically manipulated, hyper-intelligent dog, this golden retriever, is a major character in this movie. And it is just the cutest goddamn thing. It is every single scene you see this fucking golden retriever and you're like, oh, am I a softie? Because I like golden retrievers? Probably. But goddamn, this dog is cute. And there's a goddamn scene where the dog, because it's, you know, super intelligent and can communicate, types on a computer with a fucking pencil in its mouth. And it's goddamn the most adorable thing you ever saw in your whole fucking miserable ass life. It would bring a goddamn nihilist to a smile. That's all I got to say. So Mark Singer, he breaks out because he had gotten some altercation with an officer. So they're going to court-martial this guy and send him to the Hootskow. And on the way, of course, the Jeep that he's in the middle of the night that doesn't look like it's driving anywhere because obviously it's not. It's just a black background with a Jeep kind of bouncing in it. They fall over and he escapes and goes to his ex-wife's house because they're separated at the moment. And the ex-wife, who provides the only nudity in this entire movie, does not make it. She sits and like tries to help out Mark Singer the best she can. She still obviously loves the guy, even though he's a fucking idiot and he has like the dumbest looking fucking crew cut you've ever seen. She's still in love with this guy, even though she has another man. He shows up and, you know, she's hooking up with some dude upstairs. But Mark Singer don't give a shit. He's fucking on the loose from the goddamn military. And there's a monster after him. So all he cares about is hiding out. And eventually the ex-wife, which, you know, it's unfortunate that I'm going to say this, but I'm going to say this. I wish this happened more often. The ex-wife doesn't make it. That's terrible of me to say. And I don't really, I don't know who said that. That wasn't me that just said that. I think somebody just hijacked the fucking podcast and came and talked for me because that wasn't me that said that. You didn't hear that from me. I have a feeling there's an editor here present that came in and spoke for me. That wasn't me. So eventually, the golden retriever rats out the doctor that made him, and he denies it over a phone call in the least convincing way. Like, eventually, Mark Singer befriends Tracy Scoggins after the dog basically tells, because the dog and Mark Singer become friends as he's on the run, and the dog communicates in the dumbest fucking scene you've ever seen to Mark Singer that, hey, you got to get a hold of this doctor. And they call and they get to be friends. And then when they get over to Tracy Scoggins' place, she calls up the dude that created the monster. And the dog basically tells Tracy Scoggins, hey, this dude made the monster. He's guilty. And the doctor's like, yeah, nah, that ain't true. You're going to believe a dog? You don't believe dog, right? Just the least convincing thing I've ever seen in my entire life. So the Watcher, which is the monster, we'll just call the fucking monster the Watcher, wants to kill the dog the way that Michael Myers wants to kill Laurie Strode. That's essentially like the entire gimmick of this movie, is that they created this ridiculously rubber looking humanoid type monster with a mouth that extends out like a fucking tunnel. Trust me, when we get to the bad, we'll talk more about this idiotic fucking looking monster. But they created this monster to have a telepathic link with the Golden Retriever. So the Golden Retriever could infiltrate enemy encampments because it's so goddamn cute. They'll of course, let the goddamn Golden Retriever in. No fucking humanoid on Earth could not be completely disarmed by the cuteness of this dog. So the dog would infiltrate the enemy ranks, and then this monster would fucking bum rush them with a quickness and eradicate everyone. That's the entire gimmick. Why they created this. This monster only is there in order to kill anything that comes near the fucking dog. So basically, the Watcher and the dog is like, because he wants to kill the dog. He wants to go find the dog and kill the dog. It's weird. Don't ask me. It's basically a Michael Myers, Laurie Strode situation. And I found that quite humorous and I liked it. The bonding between the spy dog and the monster is just weird. There's a scene near the end where the dog is super cute and goes up to the monster and the monster's dying. Spoiler alert. Like, you didn't know the fucking monster was going to get killed in this gimmick. The dog brings him over something. The monster's like, oh. You never knew that this really stupid looking monster would fall in love with the dog in the end. It's fucking weird. The monster at one point, when it's on the loose, trashes a convenience store and throws around popcorn and drinks all the fucking beer in this joint like a goddamn wino and gets drunk with bums and then flips out when they try to steal his stuffed animal. There's a scene where the fucking monster finds a stuffed animal and basically carries it around like my little fucking son does with one of his stuffies. And when he gets drunk at the convenience store that he trashes, he gets pissed when one of the bums tries to take the fucking stuffy. Lesson, never take a stuffy away from a fucking mutated humanoid type monster that is on a murderous rampage. I didn't think I ever needed to tell anyone that, but there it is. And last but not least on the goods, like marimba soundtracks in 90s movies, what's with snare drums as shorthand for military guys? Do you feel that that is kind of like offensive to military people? That the only way in movies you have shorthand to know that this person that is in civilian clothes is military is there's got to be a flared snare drum playing in the background? That shit makes me laugh so fucking hard. So I don't know why I put that on the good, but I just sometimes that kind of shit, I enjoy it and I appreciate it. But I kind of wonder, right? You got to wonder why they fucking do that shit. So let's get to the bads. The first scene, as I had alluded to before, I had told you before, these two FBI agents show up to kind of like check out this monster, the Watcher monster. And, the FBI agent shows up and Tracy Scoggins is upstairs with the dog and she's trying to teach it the alphabet and whatnot. And the FBI agent calls Tracy Scoggins a head shrinker as an insult. So that's basically like calling a fucking nerd Poindexter. And of course, you got to have that in this movie. Later, when Mark Singer is being court-martialed and being driven to his next location to, you know, find out what his punishment is, the asshole military guy driving the Jeep that they're riding in tries to run over the fucking Golden Retriever, exclaiming that would be 2 points. And we find out that the military is far more sinister than the fucking Watcher's monster. The Watcher's monster in the end ends up falling in love with the dog. This military guy don't give a fuck. He was going to run that shit over. Mark Singer's hair, as I had talked to you about before, is like a spiked helmet in this movie. And his performance, not unlike his fucking spiked hair, is as cheese dick as you can possibly get. Even though, you know, I have no problem seeing Mark Singer in this movie. He is fairly wooden in stock. And I'm wondering if he was told to do that because he's supposed to be a military guy. But honestly, there was nothing very exciting about the fact that he was in this movie as opposed to any other generic actor that could have been in this. This was no Beastmaster performance. This was, hey, I'm generic white guy. That's all this was. The best scene probably in this movie with Mark Singer is a scene where he's rummaging around in his ex-wife's closet and he's basically hanging out in whitey tidies. I'm sure all my boy loving guys would fucking love this scene because man, oh man, is he in them whitey tidies for a while and he's cut. So he looks pretty good. Having said that, let's get finally to the fucking Watcher monster. I said this before, and it can't be stressed enough. This monster is helped so much in this movie, I would say probably about three quarters of the movie, by the fact that it is not lit. It is a shadow most of this movie, and you see kind of like predator vision when it walks around stalking things because it can't really see in the daytime. It only can see at night. When you finally get a good look at this fucking gimmick, that monster is one of the hokiest, stupidest rubber monster outfits I've ever seen. Like, the vast majority of the body is fine, but the head is the dumbest design. It's like a cone head mixed with the mouth. And this is what makes it look so stupid, is just a wiggly circle extended like cylinder out the front of the fucking monster's face with a bunch of teeth. And it doesn't move, obviously. It just shakes around like a rubber piece of shit. The fucking monster that you're supposed to be scared of, that's going around literally tearing people to shreds, is as fucking stupid and hokey as Radu's wiggly ass fingers and subspecies. God damn, is it a fucking boner killer? Like, you see this goddamn monster and you're expecting, oh man, it's gonna be badass. No, it's fucking dumb. And way beneath what the fucking box art like promises you. Trust me, you'll see this monster and you will go from hard to your dick is inside your body. It's fucking terrible. Goddamn terrible. The VHS that I watched it on really does the monster a lot of fucking favors. This monster is supposed to be the next step in evolution, but it doesn't even have a functional fucking mouth. Figure that one out. Mark Singer, and this will be our last bad of this, brings the dog to a motel with no pets allowed, then proceeds to have a conversation with the dog where the dog is barking constantly in a scene where either the fucking owner of the goddamn motel is out to lunch or fell asleep, but there were huge signs everywhere, no pets allowed, and this dog is just fucking howling almost the entire time. Just a fucking stupid ass scene. In our only what the fuck in this movie, which really, as I said before, is a fairly generic ass movie. There's really nothing that struck me as what the fuck outside of the basic premise. Mark Singer evades the cops by having the dog look like he's driving his car at one point. And that's Watchers 2. Just kind of like a big pile of meh. I wouldn't recommend it. If it's on and you're like a completionist and want to watch all 14 Watchers movies, I think there's four of them. I'm pretty sure there's four of them. I mean, watch it. You don't have to stop and not watch it, but it's not really anything I would get too fucking bent over or excited about. It just happened. So let's take a quick short break. That's the end of Watchers 2. And when we come back, we're going to talk about one goofy ass fucking sci-fi Terminator style alien ripoff called Project Shadow Chaser 3000.
Stay tuned.
You are listening to Astro Radio Z.
In this galaxy, in this ship,
it's heading right for us.
You tell me it's going to hit us.
Exactly what I'm telling you.
Lies a dormant force.
There's a ship on the collision course with us.
So terrifying.
Impact, 70 seconds.
This thing ain't human! It ain't human! No!
So deadly.
I saw someone or something! I didn't have a chance, man!
That once awakened, it cannot be controlled.
He's here.
How do we know?
This is some sort of Aladdin's cave, and there's a TV garden.
These doors! They won't stop!
Do it!
Don't tempt me! All right, you two, put your goddamn swaddling like a couple of kids.
The only thing we have to be concerned about is staying alive.
Sam Bottoms. Masetta Vander. Christopher Atkins.
How the hell did he get in here?
Frank Zagarino. And Christopher Neame.
Chance of a lifetime.
Project Shadow Chaser 3.
How long have we got?
The final countdown.
9.
Welcome back, folks. Our second movie here on the shoe today is the third movie in a series that I wasn't even aware of. Project Shadow Chaser, I guess, is one of these early 90s kind of direct-to-video alien clone type movies where you have a bunch of like space truckers, essentially, that are hauling cargo from one destination to another. They come in contact with a floating vessel that houses a mysterious killer that eventually eradicates them all. This is Alien. That's all this movie is. And from the looks of it, I mean, I've never seen any of the other movies, but that's all Project Shadow Chaser 3000 was. I'd never heard of this thing before. The cover is fucking hilarious and made me immediately want to watch it. It's essentially, take a look at the episode art in your podcast app, and you'll see that it's just like a red moon with a dude that looks like Roundy's fucking Dolph Lundgren with a robot eye and two spaceships. It is a cobbled together Photoshop piece of shit. Yeah, with a tagline that says, "For years, man's deadliest enemy has been lost in space." It's as generic and low rent as they come from the looks of the box. And the surprise came to me that this was put out by New Line Home Video, probably, you know, in those early days of New Line, that this movie had a budget and wasn't just a completely low down dirty piece of fucking trash. I was really surprised by Project Shadow Chaser 3000. If you get past the fact that, yes, this is just a goddamn basic alien clone, which we've seen a million and a half times, there was a lot that this movie had going for it. When you see the cover, you'd expect this thing to be a total cheap piece of shit. And maybe in some aspects of the production it was, but I would say the vast majority of the production value, the way the look, the feel, the edit, the music, everything about this movie was well beyond what I figured it would be for a part three in a film series I had never fucking heard of. This was directed by John Ayres in 1995, and Thankfully, this wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. What is this movie? As I said before, the plot synopsis here on Google gives me: spacefarers find death in the form of a shape-shifting android when they collide with a long-abandoned mining vessel. As I said before, it's Alien. You've seen this thing a million and a half times. Why didn't I read the back of the box? Because both of these tapes this episode were just littered with promotional advertising. Like, this box in particular has no explanation as to what this movie is on the back. It is just a straight shill. There's just an ad, the entire box. And that's what you get with some of these, you know, screener tapes, is that they're not concerned with, you know, trying to hook the viewer in. They're trying to hook the people that actually run the video stores. Because back in the day, you had to sell tape to tape to tape. It wasn't like a streaming service where they just give you a catalog. Every single movie that came out had to be pitched and sold to each of the video stores. So these screener tapes would be sent out to, you know, various mom and pop organizations or like a Blockbuster or other places to entice them to say, hey, you want to put these on your shelf? And here's, you know, if you do this, like this one has, buy a two pack and save $20 on the overall price. Because these tapes would be like $80, $90 a piece. But the lower budgeted ones, and you'd see this on a lot of like a lot of the stuff that we're watching here on these episodes, the front end will be just filled with hard shills for movies you'd never fucking heard of, because they got to try and sell these things. So they would sell them for like $14 a piece if you bought like three of them. And Project Shadow Chaser is no different. Same with Watchers too. Like, there was an awful lot of shilling going on compared to some of the other movies that I've watched off of these screener tapes that I have. But these two movies in particular, man, it was just like nonstop barrage of a bunch of movies I'd never heard of. A couple of them I actually kind of want to check out now, but the vast majority were like weird period pieces, and it was fucking silly. Like, it was really fucking silly. Maybe sometime down the road, I'll sit and I'll, on the Instagram, I'll post a bunch of the fucking like straight shills that they have at the beginning of these tapes, because it's weird. It is such a goddamn time capsule. You don't see stuff like this anymore, because that's just not how movies are sold. That's not how they're put out anymore. So it's an interesting look back in time at the days of the VHS rental market. But anyways, so I didn't read the back of the box, because there isn't really anything on the back of this box whatsoever. But you don't really need much of an explanation. It's Alien. There's nothing much else going on plot-wise for this movie. You know every beat that's going on in this thing. But let's get to the good, the bad, and the what the fucks. As I said before, I love the look of this movie. For what it is, this really kind of like low-budget, mid-to-low-budget sci-fi movie, the miniature spaceships and space in general are really vibrantly colored, very saturated. Great cinematography on all of this stuff. And it, a lot of it, at least not with the VHS, I can't really speak to if this has been upgraded and put out there in any other formats. But on the VHS, this shit looked legit. This shit looked fucking great. Looked better than half of the fucking trash that I see now. I was really into it. The cast for this movie, again, and I shouldn't put this qualifier in front of it because it kind of like demeans what the movie is bringing. The cast is solid all around. The acting for what this is wonderfully camp and over the top. I appreciate it totally. I might be overselling Project Shadow Chaser 3000 at this point for what it is. But honestly, I was expecting a real piece of shit. And I gotta admit, through the entire movie, this was totally watchable. There was nothing about it that screamed, man, the makers of this movie had two dimes to rub together and a bunch of fucking jabronis to throw in front of the camera and one light. That's not this kind of movie. This looked like a legit ass fucking movie, and I loved it. There was a sequence in this where one of the crew members is being shot with a laser, and instead of hiding, continually jumps back out to get shot at again. It's fucking, if you're going to say anything about this movie, the motivations of the characters were kind of stupid. It didn't make much sense. But this scene was hilarious because there's, and I love when this kind of stuff pops up in these movies where, yeah, the premise is ripped off from something else. Nothing's terribly original about what's going on, but they just kind of push it as far as they can in the campy direction. And this movie just worked in that capacity for me. So they knew, like, these scenes where there's a killer android on the loose and they're trying to evade its, you know, capture or demise from its hands. They're just, they keep jumping out, and every time they jump out, the fucking android shoots at them and nearly kills them. I just think it's so stupid and so funny that it's a major plus for me. Speaking of the android, it's a shape-shifting, and when I tell you it's shape-shifting, it basically can take on the look of anybody it sees. So it's one of those body jumping type movies where it's not really body jumping, but it feels like, you know, Jason Goes to Hell or something like that, where you can't trust anybody, the thing, you know, things like that. So this android is going around killing each of the members of this ship that has been crashed into and taking its form to try and like lure other members in so it could kill them as well. And when it shapeshifts, it's this really kind of hokey ass digital effect, but the android looks really fucking bloody and gory and kind of gross, because at this point in the series, if you hadn't seen the other two and I hadn't, I'm guessing it's been through hell. This thing has been shot at and decommissioned and killed and whatever multiple times at this point. So its face kind of looks like the Terminator with the exoskeleton exposed, you know, and the flesh has been torn away. It's got that look to it, and it's bloody, and it's kind of cool looking. But it's barely a part of this movie because this is like part three. So not much is really explained about the android and about its capabilities. You kind of just have to, like, if you're jumping in on this movie, you're missing out on a bunch of the backstory. You get just the slightest hint of what had happened in the other movies, but that's about it. And when it morphs and it consumes people, it turns into like this weird oldies version of Dolph Lundgren, as I had said before. So I don't know. I kind of liked the shape-shifting, dopey, Dolph Lundgren-esque android in this movie. The bad thing about it is, if not to jump the gun, is that it doesn't really come into the movie until like 50 minutes in, or like with like a half hour left of it. You know, it's kind of a bummer that we don't get a whole shit ton of this android in it. The first bad, which really kind of made me go, oh no, what am I in for, is that when the title hits, the title is the cheapest fucking witchcraft digital title hit. It's just one of those fucking, this thing is just like, oh man, we didn't know the title going in. We're going to toss it on here post script. And when we finally get into the editing room, and here it is, and it looks fucking terrible. But thankfully, the rest of the movie didn't look as bad as this cheapo ass fucking title hit. The opening scene, for some unknown reason, has a lot of really disorienting editing, which the rest of the movie doesn't. So that was kind of a bummer. The movie, as I had said before, is a typical plot of a crew almost done with their tour on a ship and they run into trouble. So blah. And then once the crew goes on this ship that crashes and collides with them, the film kind of slows to a crawl. And it's just this typical evil force kills. This typical, there's an evil force one by one killing wandering people on a ship flick. So, I mean, your mileage will vary if you know, have a warm spot for these kind of atmospheric space station movies. But there's a good 20 minutes of this movie that could just probably be cut down expeditiously, and you wouldn't really miss it. I could have used way more of the android and a lot less of the fucking wandering around on the ship bullshit and the bickering, the interplay between the people that feel that, oh man, there's a possibility that these people have found some sort of rare element that's going to make us all rich. Get rid of that fucking nonsense and just bring on more fucking android killing people stuff. I would have been much happier with that stuff. There's one guy in this movie, and I mean, it could be bad to some and it could be fun to others, but there's a handicapped guy on this that rides in a wheelchair whose name is Wheels. So you got that in this movie. And then there is a scene where there's a hull breach and it sends debris flying all over everyone. And when the people move from this hull breach and all the debris, it's clearly foam. It's definitely not metal that's sitting on top of them. It's clearly foam. And that's kind of a bummer because the rest of the fucking movie actually looks fairly decent. There's just certain elements and certain spaces where, you know, the cracks kind of show. Let's move on to the what the fucks. And there's actually a number of what the fucks in this movie. There, when the two ships collide, the one ship that was the space freighters and then the fucking derelict vessel that runs into them. When the derelict vessel rams through the fucking spaceship, there's a lady that gets impaled from the ship collision. And her partner tells her, oh, don't worry about it. You'll be okay. We'll fix this. Mind you, her entire stomach has been impaled by an antenna. I'm sorry to break it to you, bud. He ain't fixing that. Unless they got that fucking Jason X nanotechnology. Boy, she's fucked. And big surprise, she dies. Later, they're told the temp on the ship is well beyond freezing, the derelict vessel, when they enter it. They're told that it's well beyond freezing. And instead of staying in their, like, temperature-controlled space suits that monitor their breathing, the oxygen, and everything that they would be dealing with so it would be comfortable to navigate space, they take these off and wander around in freaking vests with exposed skin. What the stupid fuck is this? Just sleeveless outfits and other totally inappropriate stuff for things that are for an environment that's well beyond freezing. So later, Wheels, the wheelchair-bound tech, has his wheelchair hacked and is forced into a decompression chamber by the android, the killer android, and has a really hokey, stupid-looking digital explosion. It's silly and really fucking weird at the same time. Last but not least, for some reason, we find out later in the movie that if you turn on yellow blinking lights, it blinds the android for some unknown reason. The what the fuck point of this, and it's not just that stupid yellow blinking lights blind this android. It's that when we go to the POV of the android looking about and trying to like showcase that it's blind, you clearly see the people in front of him that are motionless. That are supposedly hiding that he can't see. They are right there. So it's like, what the fuck? You totally fumbled and botched the fucking ball on this one. So dumb. Project Shadow Chaser is a fun time. Even though I kind of dogged on it a little bit. Honestly, if you're just looking for an alien ripoff and you're into that kind of stuff and you like kind of lower rent, you know, sci-fi fare, Project Shadow Chaser 3000 was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. The acting was campy. The situations and the killer were fucking silly. And it was over the top. There was some decent gore. And honestly, it flew by. I give it a thumbs up. Of the two movies today on the podcast, I choose Project Shadow Chaser 3000 wholeheartedly. Thumbs up, man. And that's all we got. And we're going to take a short break. When we come back, let's talk about some other bullshit, huh? Let's do it.
This is Astro Radio Z, and we love talking about movies with you. If you are looking for more episodes and want to become part of the show, go to patreon.com/AstroRadioZ and become a monthly subscriber to have access to 100 plus bonus episodes of content. Jump in. Make Astro Radio Z yours and become a Patreon subscriber at patreon.com/AstroRadioZ.
So now that we've moved on from our VHS excursion, I think this third section, the ass end of Astro Radio Z, has kind of now become and morphed into the, hey, Derek, what the fuck have you been watching outside of this stupid VHS crap section? I need to come up with something a little punchier than that. That seems a little long-winded, doesn't it? But that's what this section is. And honestly, the only thing I have to report to you guys other than we have... Let's see, what all happened? Oh, other than Last of Us ending, which thumbs up, big thumbs up if you're fans of the video game. They stuck the landing, Last of Us, the TV show, good stuff. I recommend going and watching it. I'm really glad they did it. The only thing I would say is I wish that it had been longer. I wish they wouldn't have, it felt like a Cliff Notes version of the video game to me. Everybody else, including the person I watched it with, enjoyed it. So that's all I got to say. I say, go for it. Watch Last of Us. Go out and, get HBO Max and pay for HBO Max in order to watch it? No. Do the 7-day free trial and binge watch it. I don't know. I'm not too keen on HBO Max. It's okay. It's got Studio Ghibli. I'll give it that. So, Last of Us, thumbs up. The only other thing I kind of watched since the last episode, I've watched Pearl, which is the prequel to X that Ty West put out. And I know this is not going to be popular with a lot of you, but I just don't get it. I don't get the hype around these two movies. I don't get what everybody's so excited about with these things. Was it bad? No. Was it terribly great? No. It was kind of blah. Like, I was expecting so much more out of this thing. Mia Goth, thumbs up. I think she's doing a great job with the stuff that she's been given. And this movie in particular kind of felt like her and Ty West just wanted to play around a little bit. I wasn't terribly into anything that happened throughout the entire thing. I think it's better than X, but that's not saying much. I didn't really think X was all that great. And I know that's going to be sacrilege for the vast majority of people, because for some reason, if any horror movie is slightly okay, it's the best horror movie of the year. Man, that's a sad state of affairs for us horror fans, isn't it? If... I mean, I could go into it. I just think X is just a fucking Texas Chainsaw Massacre ripoff. Like, it does nothing for me. And Pearl, while it's not exactly that, it's just kind of there. I wasn't terribly excited when it was over. I was just kind of like, oh, okay, that was all right. We watched something. I gave it 3 out of 5 Draculas, which means it's a good movie. It just, nothing special. So that's it. That's all I got for Astro Radio Z this episode. The next two movies we're going to be covering here on the show, which, oh man, I'm slightly hesitant about jumping into, are, I got a tape from my bud Eric a while back of God's Bloody Acre. We're going to cover this movie. I've been meaning to watch it for a long time, and I've just never gotten around to it. So we're going to watch God's Bloody Acre, and then we're going to watch the sequel, not the original. Enough people have talked about American Werewolf in London. I don't feel anyone's talking about an American Werewolf in Paris, and I got this gimmick on fucking VHS, so we're going to fucking talk about it. We're going to watch it and talk about it, and I'll tell you this, on the cover, Buzz Weekly gives it 4 stars. I think Buzz Weekly is full of shit, because I remember going to the movie theater on a date way back in the day when this thing came out, and walking out thinking, oh, fuck, I want my money back. So that's what we're going to be talking about next episode of Astro Radio Z. As always, thank you for joining me, and I shall talk to you soon. Astro Radio Z is written, performed, edited, and produced by Derek Carey. Executive produced by Vaughn Colmier and Shannon Smith. The music that was played here on Astro Radio Z this episode, which I completely adore and hope you guys go out and purchase, was Every Time I Die, Post Boredom, and Ministry, I Wanted to Tell Her.
Good shit, man.